Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Friday, August 29th, 2014, episode 1010, the NFC South and West preview show. Too much happening and too little time, so I will have to cram all eight teams in those two divisions into the show. Get ready for my preview of the Falcons, Panthers, Saints, and Bucks from the South, as well as the 49ers, Cardinals, Rams, and the defending Super Bowl, Seattle Seahawks. The defending Super Bowl champions, that is. Commissioner Goodell is apologizing. I'll tell you why. Plus, there's finally a ruling on Josh Gordon. The 49ers get a player suspended, and there's a USC player that pulls a Tao. What? Let's chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. All right. Yeah, first of all, I'd like to apologize for you. The season got here quicker than expected, so I have to put both the South and West preview shows together, as I've got, you know, a prediction show to do, which is one of the biggest shows of the year, and I've got to do a week one preview. So there is no time to do two shows for these two divisions. So I'm going to talk quick, get through all eight teams, and not talk about much news except for what I mentioned earlier. Real quickly, no other anecdotes today, no little stories, no tales. I've got my lovely daughter, Elena, who's here witnessing. I'm doing this live for her right now. Stop smiling. You are not going to get me to laugh. I have a deal with my daughter. If she gets to make me laugh, if she makes me laugh while I'm doing the show without making any sound whatsoever, tonight when we go to dinner, she can have a pizookie. Now, if you guys don't know what a pizookie is, you are not living, she says, because it is beautiful. You're not supposed to say anything. But, you know, she had to say that. You're not living. Go try a pizookie. We're going to go have one tonight if she can make me laugh during the show. Anyways, quickly, I opened the Survivor Pool. You know the Survivor Pool. Pick a winner every week. You can only use the team once. If you win, you move on. You lose and you go home. Go to our Facebook, Twitter, or www.nflrnr.com website so you can find out how to sign up. Already have 80 entries into that contest, and the pool is growing as we speak. There's also a pick'em pool. Head to nflrnr.com/pick'em. That's www.nflrandr.com/pick'em, P-I-C-K-E-M. Create an account, sign up, play against me. You can multiple picks. Yeah, you can make multiple picks. And that you will pick every game every week. I promise not to drop the ball as we did last year for the final 3 weeks of the season. We never updated that. We're going to go all the way through. You are going to be competing against me. Here's the deal regarding the pick'em pool. Every week, I will pick one person who joins the pick'em pool to go up against me that week, because I got to have a challenger. Without Jeff here, I've got no one to challenge me, so there will be no challenge game. If the fans of the show beat me throughout the entire season as we go up week to week, then the fans can suggest what I have to do as a punishment. That's how I'm going to handle the challenge game here this season. So if you want to get a chance to be the picks that goes up against me for any one of the weeks, make sure that you sign up, nflrnr.com/pick'em. Finally, the website is going to go through a little change. If you are a member, a show donor, your password will remain the same. We will keep it there. Elena's having a – what's going on? Oh, the book. She's reading a book over here. Anyways, thank you very much for all the show donors, for all you do, for continuing to listen and donate to the show. I really appreciate it. It keeps me going, keeps the website up and running and humming, and everything is good. Let's get to some NFL news, and we'll start with Roger Goodell admitting that he did not get it right. Yes. Now, regarding Ray Rice punishment, as Ray Rice only got a 2-week punishment, Commissioner Goodell had been getting some heat, especially since the Josh Gordon appeal was denied and Josh Gordon, the wide receiver of the Cleveland Browns, got a 1-year suspension. We'll get to that in a minute. But now we'll talk about Ray Rice's punishment of only 2 games for domestic violence, beating his wife. We all saw the video the TMZ put out with, you know, beat his wife, knocked her unconscious, and he dragged her back into the elevator. So Goodell punished Ray Rice for 2 games, suspended him for 2 games. And this is what Goodell said in a statement. "My disciplinary decision led the public to question our sincerity, our commitment, and whether we understood the toll that domestic violence inflicts on so many families. I take responsibility both for the decision and for ensuing that our actions in the future properly reflect our values. I didn't get it right. Simply put, we have to do better, and we will do better." And after making that statement and apologizing, he says that the NFL has made new disciplinary standards. He says that they just can't allow players to do what Ray Rice did. "First-time offenders now of domestic violence will face a 6-game suspension immediately. No questions asked. No trying to appeal it or what have you. And that suspension can be longer if it involves a weapon, choking, repeatedly striking an individual, and when the assault is committed against a pregnant woman or in the presence of a child." So if you do any of those things, which is just heinous, it could be more than 6-game suspension. Here's the big one. Repeat offenders, happens again, a second infraction, you will be banned from the NFL. Now, it's not necessarily for life, but you better just think it is for life. Because after 1 year, repeat offenders could apply for reinstatement to the NFL, but there is no guarantee that they will reinstate you back into the league. It is most likely that a second infraction would result in lead to a lifetime ban. So those are the disciplinary standards that the NFL and NFL personnel have come to apply. Sure, it probably stems all because Ray Rice got off a little light, and it seems very light compared to the fact that Josh Gordon, whose appeal was denied, has to sit up for the entire season for the Cleveland Browns. And he gets suspended for 1 year. So good for Roger Goodell coming out, making that decision, saying that he was wrong, admitting to the fact that he was wrong and he didn't get it right. Ray Rice kind of gets off, but if he ever was to go through anything like that again, he is gone from the league. It's that simple. Now, for everybody who's out there saying, "Well, it's just not right. Gordon's going to be suspended for the whole year. And Ray Rice gets to play after 2. It's just not right." I hear you. I agree with you. But when this happened, there was rules in place in the CBA, which Josh Gordon signed, that said if you're a repeat offender, you could be suspended for 1 year. Gordon was doing illegal stuff in college. That's why he was no longer in college, and the Browns got him in the supplemental draft. So nobody wanted him because of his off-the-field problems. Then he messed up multiple times while being in the NFL. So much so that last year he got suspended 4 games. He appealed that, and it was reduced to 1 game. Okay? And he still didn't learn. He did not learn from his mistakes. He got suspended. They reduced it, saying, "Okay, we're going to reduce it for you." He served his 1-game suspension, and he still failed more tests. Not to mention that while he was sitting there waiting for the results of his appeal, he got caught in a DUI. So please, yes, it is heinous to hit a woman. No man should ever hit a woman, short of her coming at you with a gun or a knife trying to kill you. you should not put your hands, if you are a male, on a female. You should never strike a female. If she provokes you, which apparently was the case here, you walk away. You do not hit a woman, period. Yes, it is disgraceful and it's a heinous act what Ray Rice did, but don't compare him to Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon is suspended for a year because he deserves to be suspended for a year. He was an idiot. He violated the rules. He kept doing drugs. Even after he was suspended last year and they reduced that suspension for him, and I thought it was them being nice. They can't be nice now. We were nice last year and you didn't learn from it. Why are we going to be nice now? He gets exactly what he deserves. He's going to be suspended for a year. Josh Gordon says, well, I'm going to sue the league. Nope, you can't really do that. It's in the CBA that you take the suspension like a man and you just deal with it because that is what we agreed to upon. You get caught doing drugs. This is the suspension you get, and that's it. And that was in place. That's why he's getting suspended for a year. Nothing was in place regarding domestic violence when Ray Rice got punished for two games. That is the only reason why Ray Rice today only got a two-game suspension. Now, Commissioner Goodell says we have to put something in place. Mea culpa. I'm sorry. We did it right. We did it wrong with Ray Rice. Now we're going to try and get it right. Because this is a league where we don't want to be seen as a bunch of thugs that hit women. And so I hope that, you know, now there's a standard in place and that these guys are held accountable. As far as Josh Gordon is Josh Gordon is concerned, you know, he can't sue the league. I think within a span of 12 hours, he said, I'm going to sue the league. No, you can't do that. I'm going to go play CFL. CFL says, no, we can't take you because you're suspended from the National Football League, and we've got a kind of like a in our bylaws that we can't hire someone who's been suspended, who is currently in contract with a team in the National Football League and they're suspension. So he's like, well, I'll ask the Browns to cut me. Then, you know, it doesn't matter that I'm not suspended because I'm not with a team in the National Football League. Well, the Browns are like, yeah, we're not going to cut you, dude. After everything we've gone through, we're going to sit around and wait for you to serve your suspension and come back and help our team next year. That's what you're going to do. And that is what you're going to do, Mr. Gordon. You're going to get some help. You're going to stay off the weed or whatever drugs that you're doing. You're going to just stay in tip-top shape, exercise well, eat well, get ready to play football next year. But we're not going to see you this season. So there, enough about that. Whew, man, I went on a little kind of crazy rant there. Did that scare you there, Linda? Yeah, a little bit. Even Leno was like a little bit. Anyways, the San Francisco 49ers are not without escaping suspensions as well. Oh, that's the wrong button. It happens sometimes. It's the wrong button. Aldon Smith is suspended 9 games by the NFL for violating the league's policy on personal conduct and substances of abuse. Smith will be eligible to return week 11 against the New York Giants since the 49ers have a week 8 bye. Aldon Smith, remember, kind of was out of the league, had to leave the team, the San Francisco 49ers, last year for a little bit. He's got a problem, and he's got to get fixed. You know, the 49ers, Trent Baalke released a statement. Says Aldon has taken responsibility for his actions and has continued to show growth personally and professionally. We will continue to support him, but it is time to put this matter behind us and focus on the season ahead. Well, yeah, you got to put it behind you because the suspension came from the NFL. I want to know why the San Francisco 49ers didn't do anything themselves. I mean, I'm starting to question some of these teams who let some of these players get away with stuff and say, you know what? I'm going to let the league deal with it. You know, the 49ers didn't do anything to Smith for what? Getting arrested at LAX for making a joke about a bomb? The guns charges that he had? He had a DUI arrest? And he had to check himself into a treatment facility? It is pretty it's pretty surprising to me that it took this long for Aldon Smith to get a suspension. But there you have it. It's nine games. Elena's trying to hand me something to read. I can't read while I'm doing the show. What do you think? Should I read it out loud to the people? It says, in science, my table was playing telephone because we were done with our work and it was so fun. It was a fun day. Really? That's what I just read to the whole world? Oh, my goodness. Give me something a little bit more interesting next time, for crying out loud. All right, and then the file, in case you missed it, this is just an interesting story, and it's against a university that I personally do not like all that much, so I'm going to take a shot whenever I can. And it's USC. Cornerback Josh Shaw made up a story, and he went from hero to zero in a matter of hours. Now, here's what happened in this case. He's a cornerback, and Josh Shaw showed up to practice, and he had high ankle sprains on both his ankles. And he had to tell the coaches something why he was hurt. So he said that he saw that his nephew was drowning in a pool, and he was on the balcony of the second floor of this apartment complex, and so he jumped off the balcony so that he could jump into the pool and save his drowning nephew. Sounds heroic, right? That's a hero right there. He jumped from how high to get into the pool to save a child who doesn't know how to swim. He's in the pool by himself, and he saved him out. That was the story. And everybody ran with it out here, especially in the L.A. news media. He was a hero. Oh, hero football player from USC. How heroic. He jumped down, saved his nephew from drowning. It's great. But the story just sounded a little fishy. And people started calling head coach Sarkisian of the USC Trojans and the athletic director over there and said, you know what? Yeah, that's not really what happened, because his nephew wasn't even around. Now, they started investigating, and SC started investigating, cops started investigating. Turned out that, you know, they needed some clarity. So the University of Southern California announced that they were going to investigate the matter to see what really happened. And after a couple days of investigation, Josh Shaw released through his attorney a statement saying that he fabricated the story. He didn't make it up. I mean, he made it up. Probably because he didn't want to get in trouble. And the crazy thing is that, you know, we still don't know what happened. Some people are saying that it's possible that he had a domestic violence incident where he might have hit his girlfriend. His girlfriend really isn't cooperating with police, and he kind of leapt from her balcony onto the balcony below him and then onto the ground to get away. There was a call to police station that a man with dreadlocks was climbing down from a third-story balcony. The woman who resided in the apartment fits the description of a girl that was, you know, going out with Shaw. So it's we don't know exactly what happened. And I guess until he decides to come forth and tell the story of what happened, we're not going to know. But the fact of the matter is that he is not a hero. He didn't save a drowning child. And he just, you know, obviously didn't want to show up with busted ankles and say, hey, coach, I can't play because I busted my ankles. Well, how'd you do that? Well, I was saving my child, saving my nephew. Well, that's not the case. And until either his girlfriend or the police get down to the bottom of it, we're not going to find out what's happening. I just think it's interesting. I know these college kids, they're under a lot of pressure, and he's probably worried about his scholarship and playing football for the team, and he had just been made the captain. It's kind of I'm kind of making light of it, and I probably shouldn't, because it is especially if domestic violence is involved. It's a pretty sad case. Once again, I'll reiterate back to the beginning. There's no reason for you to hit a woman ever. Just shouldn't do it, and that's that. So, but there you go, USC. Trojans, there you go. They're the ones that put up the little bunny foo-foo. You know, every time they score a field goal or a touchdown, they go like this, Elena. Isn't that little bunny foo-foo? Little bunny foo-foo. That's what they do. That's what they do. They play their song, and they do the little bunny foo-foo. Never thought of it, but that's what they do. All right, we're going to move on and take a look at the NFC South.
All right, coming in to represent the Atlanta Falcons, Jason Brakefield. Jason, how you doing, man?
Good, buddy. How you doing, Steven?
All right. So, Jason, real quickly, were you able to get through Hard Knocks watching your team?
I'm through the first three episodes. I've actually got the fourth one recorded on my DVR, but haven't had a chance to sit down with the wife yet. I'm not allowed to watch it until she's allowed to watch it.
What? Wow. Usually it's the other way around. It's like, you better not watch it without me.
I'll tell you, man, she's just as hardcore as I am. She doesn't want me to see it without her seeing it.
Well, that is awesome. To be quite honest, I have yet to watch the fourth episode as well. I watched the first three. It was not the Hard Knocks I've come to expect.
Yeah. I don't know. There's not enough drama. There's no quarterback controversy. I love, on a personal level, seeing, you know, my team and, all the players and the meeting room stuff. And, you know, I guess it's kind of enjoyable if you're a Falcons fan, but yeah, if you're not, I don't.
Yeah, if you're not a Falcons, if you're not a Falcons fan, you're just like, will somebody beat up somebody or something?
A little boring.
Yeah. I was shocked that it was just not as entertaining as I've come to know Hard Knocks. Enough about that show. HBO gets plenty of press without us. Let's talk about the Atlanta Falcons. I guess first I want to focus on last season, man. It was just brutal. The Falcons ended 4-12, not at all what anybody expected out of Atlanta. Do they bounce back this year?
Absolutely. I think last year was a bit of an anomaly. They got bit pretty hard with the injury bug right out of the gate. And, you know, Steven Jackson went down week two, and Roddy was in and out of the lineup all year long. Julio, of course, went down. It was just, the offensive line fell apart. Matt Ryan got sacked 44 times. The list goes on.
Yeah,
I think it's definitely a bounce back year.
They certainly did not finish last year anywhere near where a lot of people were expecting the Falcons to finish. How about Steven Jackson? Does he have anything left in the tank, or are we seeing Jackson's final hurrah?
I think he's got a little left, Steven. I know at the end of last year when he did come back, I believe he had, if I'm not mistaken, he had six touchdowns in the last six games. And he showed he had a little bit left. It's just going to be a matter of him keeping those hamstrings healthy. But, you know, the good news is if not and he goes down, then there's a certain kid named Devontae Freeman who I'm pretty excited about behind him. So.
Yeah, Freeman has looked pretty good, and he is getting snatched up in a lot of fantasy football drafts, that is for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
What about the defense? I know they made some moves. Is it a better defense, and are they going to be able to stop the likes of the New Orleans Saints and the Carolina Panthers that put a lot of points up against them last year?
I think they're definitely better. I don't think they're quite there yet. I don't see them being like a top 10 defense or anything like that, but definitely better because, I mean, you look at the 2013 season, they had the widest front seven in the entire NFL. And they went out and they added Tyson Jackson. They added Paul Soliai. You know, they drafted Hageman. And, of course, they still got Babs and they still got Big Corey Peters. And now you look at this year, and I think they're ranked 13th in average weight up front. So, I mean, clearly the message was they want to beef up and they want to get bigger and get nastier, and they've done that. And I think that'll help out a lot because, you know, as you know, it's all about if you're going to beat Drew Brees, you got to get a pass rush, and that's what they're looking to do.
All right, rookie, their first-round pick, 6th overall, Jake Matthews, he's kind of looked on and off. If you're watching Hard Knocks, they make him look really good one moment, then the next moment it's like, man, brother needs some work. How does he look, and is he going to help that offensive line? Which, my understanding is that they've already got some injuries to deal with Mike Johnson out for the season.
Yeah, Mike Johnson, he's done, and Sam Baker's done, who was slated to start at left tackle. They originally had Jake Matthews at right tackle, and Baker went down, as he typically seems to do. He's a bit of a China doll. And they shifted Jake Matthews over to left tackle. And like you said, he's been on, he's been off. There's definitely going to be some growing pains for him, but I think within the next 3 years, you're gonna talk about him being, you know, a top three tackle in the league. So,
well, you know what, Sam Baker, 6'5", 301 pounds. I'm not calling him a China doll. That's for sure.
He's a huge China doll. I wouldn't call him that to his face.
I wouldn't call him that to his face.
I'll call him that to your face.
Okay, there you go. It's okay to say that to me. all right, so what I've been asking all the fans who are coming in to represent their team is better, worse, or the same as last year? What do you see for the Atlanta Falcons?
Well, I can't see it getting any worse. I'm going to say better. Like I said, I think last year was a bit of an anomaly, and you know, they got a little bit of a weaker schedule than they had last year. I see them finishing 10-6 and snatching a wild card.
10-6. Well, that would be certainly a big bounce back for the Atlanta Falcons, and of course, getting back to the playoffs, which is going to be huge. Because I just see the NFC. There's so many good teams. I think over in the AFC, 9 wins is going to sneak you into the playoffs. That's not going to be good enough in the NFC.
Think you're going to have 11, huh?
At the very least 10. You're not getting definitely in with 9 10. This year.
Right. No, definitely not 9. No, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, so very interesting. Anything else you've got on the Falcons that we need to know about before the season kicks off?
Look out for Roddy and Julio, man. They're back. They're back. They stay healthy. That's the you're looking at the best wide receiver duo in the NFL right there. So they're going to put up big numbers if you got them in fantasy.
Yeah, I'm taking a shot. I got Julio Jones in a couple leagues, so I had to go Julio Jones because people kept snatching Dez Bryant away from me right before my pick.
Ah.
So next up for me after Dez was Julio. So I hope he does have a big season for you. Jason, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And hopefully throughout the season, we'll have you back on if there's any Falcons news to talk about.
Absolutely, Steven. I'd love to. Thanks for having me, man. Rise up.
All right. There you go. Rise up, the mantra of the Atlanta Falcons. I wonder what the ratings are right now for Hard Knocks. I can't believe that it's not I'm sure it's not as high as other years. It just didn't feel like a great show this year. Now let's get to the Carolina Panthers. You know what? The Carolina Panthers are a mystery to me. I'm not really sure what I'm going to get when I'm watching this team. This is a team that won the division last year. They were 12-14, went to the playoffs. Things were looking good. Big year for Cam Newton, but now there's rumblings. Cam Newton's playing with a fracture in one of his ribs. He's not looking sharp. Hasn't looked sharp in preseason. But here you go. The Carolina Panthers are getting ready to start with a lot of question marks. They lost wide receiver Brandon LaFell, who's now in New England. They lost Steve Smith, who was Cam Newton's go-to guy. Steve Smith is now a Baltimore Raven. So offensively, they look different already right off the bat. They picked Kelvin Benjamin, wide receiver, with the 28th pick overall in this past year's draft, knowing that they needed to do something at the wide receiver position. So a kid from Florida State looking pretty good so far. However, at the running back position, the Carolina Panthers haven't really done much there. They're going to go with the old, reliable duo of Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams. That kind of scares me a little bit. Williams going into his 9th season while Stewart is in his 7th. They look good when they're on the field. When they play football, those guys can run the ball. However, it's like every year they're going through some sort of injury. There's some sort of problems. I'm not sure that the Carolina Panthers can rely on that. On the defensive side of the ball, the Carolina Panthers really have not made too much of an impact. They haven't made many changes. Their second-round pick, Ely, has looked pretty good. Not sure how big that's going to be, but I think it's the secondary. Once again, it's going to be a recurring theme with this division is how are you going to stand up to the big boys of Julio Jones and Roddy White for the Falcons, and how are you going to stop the multitude of weapons that the New Orleans Saints have, which we'll talk about in a minute. The Carolina Panthers were 12-4 last year. I don't think they're that good right now. And they are in danger. Remember, this is the division, the NFC South, that every year it seems like the team that wins the division tumbles and goes all the way down to the bottom and winds up being the last place team. Look at the Atlanta Falcons last year. They weren't last, but they had the same record as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 4-12, which they very certainly could have been last place. And they won the division the year before. So here we are with the Carolina Panthers. They're 12-4. I don't think they've slipped that much. Not sure they're going to be that bad. I think the Carolina Panthers got some stuff going for them. I still love their middle linebacking core. It's just, are they going to be able to get enough pass rush on Matt Ryan and Drew Brees to compete within this division? I think Carolina slips a little bit. I see them with 9 wins, and as you heard me say earlier, 9 wins is not going to be enough to get you into the playoffs this season. I see the Panthers at 9-7. Let's take a look at Drew Brees and his New Orleans Saints. Oh, the Saints are, they got everybody high right now. I mean, it's like, ooh, New Orleans looks so good. They got so many weapons to throw the ball to, and Drew Brees just looking fantastic. What is the Achilles heel for this team? I think it is partially their defense. However, the New Orleans Saints offensively, who is there? Who are you going to stop? Who you're going to have to pick your poison of who it is you're going to stop. I like this new wide receiver, rookie Brandon Cooks. The Cooks is cooking it up. He's looked very sharp in the preseason and in training camp. And to go add to him, you still got Kenny Stills, of course, veteran Marcus Colston, Nick Toons is still around, Robert Meacham. So there's a lot of receivers that Drew Brees can choose to throw the ball to. Joe Morgan is there, and of course, you cannot forget the redheaded wonder, Jimmy Graham. Jimmy has learned his lesson. He will no longer be dunking the ball after he scores a touchdown, but he's available too. Now, the thing for me is the running back core of the New Orleans Saints has improved dramatically. Mark Ingram has looked like he's been running like a man possessed going into his fourth year here with the New Orleans Saints. They still have good old Pierre Thomas and the addition of Kyrie Robinson. Robinson from West Texas A&M has been superb in the preseason, leading a lot of people to believe that he is going to share a lot of carries with Pierre Thomas and Mark Ingram. Look for those three guys all to get plenty of touches throughout the season. Kyrie Robinson most likely is going to replace Darren Sproles, who left via free agency to the Philadelphia Eagles. So if you tell me, well, they lost Darren Sproles, well, yeah, they replaced him, and I think with someone who's a little bit younger and faster, with Kyrie Robinson. So that's the offensive side of the ball. On the defensive side of the ball, you got to look at the New Orleans Saints secondary. Once again, as I said, it's going to be the question mark all year for all these teams in this division. So much so that in the second round, the New Orleans Saints took Stanley Jean-Baptiste, cornerback. In the second round, he was the 58th pick overall from Nebraska. He's a pretty big kid, very nice. I'm not sure he's going to be the starter. He's not ready to start, but he's 6'3". He's tall. They needed someone who could be tall to match up with those tall wide receivers from the Atlanta Falcons and the Carolina Panthers, because they got taller there as well. So the New Orleans Saints defense, are they going to be the the Rob Ryan defense of his final year with the Dallas Cowboys, where they were all over the place and couldn't stop anybody? Or are they going to be his last year's version of the New Orleans Saints defense, where they stopped just people just enough? They couldn't stop everybody, but they did just enough to get the job done. And that's what you got to look at with the New Orleans Saints. What is Ryan going to do for an encore? Is that defense going to get better? That is the question mark to the New Orleans Saints. I think I would even go so far as to say it's their Achilles heel. If the Saints can't get into shootouts, I mean, they may want to get into shootouts because they've got one of the best in Drew Brees at putting up points. But do they really want to go into the postseason putting up a lot of points and then getting knocked out because in the first round the offense stalls and Rex Ryan's defense couldn't stop anybody? So that's going to be something that we see here. And I think we're going to find out pretty early with the New Orleans Saints, because they're going to play Indianapolis, Atlanta, Cleveland, Tennessee, all coming right out of the bat. So, I'm sorry, that is the wrong schedule. I don't even know what I'm looking at right there, people. Why? All right. My daughter did it. She's been trying very hard to get me to laugh without making a sound. She just did it by putting up my Dez Bryant straw hat. Very nice. So here it is. The Atlanta Falcons, Cleveland Browns, Minnesota Vikings, Dallas Cowboys, Detroit Lions, Green Bay Packers, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So the New Orleans Saints got to come out fast. They got some division rivals in there mixed with other conference foes like Minnesota and Dallas. It's going to be extremely interesting to see how New Orleans does getting out of September, going into the first couple weeks of October. They have an early bye week 6. If they can get to their bye at 4-1, maybe even 3-2, it's going to be pretty good there for the New Orleans Saints going forward, because it does it's a little tough in the middle again, but it does kind of end very nicely back at home, a couple home games there in December against Carolina and Tampa Bay division foes. So things might not be decided in the NFC South until you hit that final month of the season. So I've covered the Atlanta Falcons with Jason Brakefield earlier. Gave you my take on the Carolina Panthers and New Orleans Saints. Joining me right now to represent the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Michael O'Halloran. Michael, how you doing?
Doing really well, Steven. How you doing?
Doing good. Excited for the season. Just like 5 days left. I cannot wait for Thursday.
Thursday cannot come soon enough.
So I understand right now you're actually ready for college football, which is getting ready to start at AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys, for a college football game, right?
That is true. I am an avid follower of college football as well. Florida State's my team, and excited for the fact they just won a championship, going to see them play their first game against Oklahoma State. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm ready for just football at this point.
That's right. Hey, as I've kind of told everyone today, the next time you see NFL play, it's regular season, and we've waited far too long. So let's get to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I guess the big news right now, right off the bat, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers trade with the evil empire, the New England Patriots, to acquire Logan Mankins. Much needed, right? Because the offensive line was struggling a little bit.
Offensive line is a big concern this year. We had 4 players that were all Pro Bowl caliber. 3 of them had been to the Pro Bowl that were on the team last year. Every one of them gone. Davin Joseph, Carl Nix, Jeremy Zuta, and Donald Penn. The line was wiped clean. So to get a guy that's been to 6 Pro Bowls, that can anchor the team, that can lead the team, it's really big.
Yeah, and the thing is there that, you know, as you said, I guess Nix retired, right? And
right.
Donald Penn, I think, where did he go? Indianapolis?
He's He's out in Oakland.
He's in Oakland. Oh, that's right, the Raiders. So, yeah, wasn't it so bad there for a little bit? You got guys brought in Richie Incognito in to talk to him?
I was a little worried when I saw that. We could use the help anywhere we could get it, but without leaders on the team, I was just – that's a bad environment, I think, for Richie.
Right, right.
And for the Buccaneers as well. I mean, we had no one there that would be able to kind of keep him in check.
Well, I think it's a good move by Lovie Smith and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to make this move to Logan Mankins. I don't think the Bucs had to give up much. Tim Wright, right? Correct?
Tim Wright, yeah. It's kind of sad to see him go because he had a pretty solid season. It was not spectacular, but it was solid, especially for a pretty poor Tampa Bay team when it comes down to it.
Right.
But we're talking about tight
end Timmy Wright.
And we drafted Austin Safarian Jenkins, who's a big, tall tight end. We picked up Brandon Myers. So I think tight end position was pretty deep. It was worth it to lose a position that we had so much strength in to get a guard that we could desperately use.
Do we know yet what the draft pick also they get? Because it was Tim Wright, the tight end, and a draft pick, right?
It was a fourth-round draft pick.
All right, not too terribly bad. A fourth-rounder, certainly for a Pro Bowl guard like Logan Mankins. That's good there. How about Dougie Martin, the running back? Is he going to be able to bounce back? He had a great season last year, not so much. Is he going to bounce back to top form?
I honestly think with Logan Mankins that he could bounce back some. Before the pickup, I really thought he was going to have another year struggling behind a young line, that he was going to take a lot of hits. But he's looked okay in pass reception, not as solid as I'd like for him to be, but looked okay. And in general, I think he's gonna have a better year.
All right. How about the defense for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? It has impressed me that the first three preseason games, not counting that fourth preseason game that happened yesterday on Thursday, that's pretty bad. Nobody plays, no real starters. but the first three regular preseason games, when the starters and the starting defense was out for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they looked solid. I believe they only gave up 3 points in three quarters of play, the starting defensive unit.
And that's actually what has excited me the most, because I know Lovie is a defensive coach, and the talent that they've drafted over the past 5, 6, 7 years, I think it's finally going to start showing itself on the field. A lot of strength in the middle. Big fan of Gerald McCoy. He's looked great. Lavonte David is a beast. That guy, he really is someone that I think is going to be one of the top three or four linebackers in the league before too long. Mark Barron, Deshaun Golston. I mean, just through the middle, we have tons of strength. And so to build from that core with the Tampa 2 that Lovie helped make with Dungie early on in his career, I think it's going to be a great foundation for success.
Okay, so we're set there. I think defensively, the Bucs, because, and you're right, of Lovie Smith, is going to be great. I think I've actually picked him up in several fantasy football leagues as my defense, because I just know Lovie and how he has his players hawked to the ball, and they just cause turnovers like crazy. So my question to you is, can that defense be good enough to stop offensive firepowers, New Orleans Saints and Atlanta Falcons in the division? Even Carolina Panthers, if Cam gets healthy, they can put up points. Can the Bucs defense compete with those offenses?
I think they have with Carolina, I think they have a really good shot, because the strength of Carolina is not their wide receiving core, which is probably one of the weaker parts for Tampa, their cornerbacks. They're going to have some problems with Roddy White and Julio Jones like everybody else is. So I think that the Atlanta games are going to be toss-ups. New Orleans is scary. I really think that Tampa Bay does not match up well with New Orleans on offense from top to bottom. As much strength as we have in the middle, we don't have anyone that covers well enough to stop Jimmy Graham or even really contain him. Last time they played him, I think he had 15 or 16 catches and 100 plus yards. It was a bad day.
All right. Looking at the offensive side of the ball, we already talked about Doug Martin. To me, young wide receiver Mike Evans has really impressed. He was the 7th overall draft pick of this year's draft for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How does he look to you?
This guy is really has me excited to watch the Buccaneers offense. He is dynamic. He's big. He knows how to go up for a ball and grab it. In college, he was exceptionally good at getting jump balls, coming down with 50-50s. This is a guy that makes me almost forget that we were one draft pick away from getting Calvin Johnson. I say almost because he's not going to be Calvin Johnson, but it's someone that I can at least get that excited about, which right. I haven't had from a Tampa Bay draft pick in a long time.
Well, then, okay, then I don't want to bring you down since we're excited with Mike Evans, okay? I don't want to be that bad, but it would be bad of me if I did not bring up the quarterback position where the three guys on the roster right now are Mike Glennon, Josh McCown, and Mike freaking Kafka.
That is a true point. And it's something that if they had not brought in McCown, I would feel really shaken about.
Right.
But I think McCown is at least as good a quarterback in the NFL as what Johnny Football is. And he's who Mike Evans had last year when Evans looked really good. I think that this is a guy that can make an offense better. It's a guy that can definitely make plays when there aren't necessarily plays to be made. And that's something Tampa at receiver hasn't really had. I love Vincent Jackson. He's great, but he's like a possession receiver. He's in the mix. He's making catches over the middle.
Right.
We now have a guy that can go deep and just take top off of defense.
All right, so is McCown going to – is he going to get the job done, or is he going to have to constantly be looking over his shoulder to see if Glennon comes in to replace him?
I definitely think he's going to be looking over his shoulder. I want him to succeed. I want him to succeed a lot because I don't personally trust in Glennon. Again, having watched college football, especially North Carolina State, I watched him play. I wasn't particularly impressed. But I think there's always going to be the feeling inside of, well, am I going to get pulled if I make this bad play? He's going to have to come out of the gate swinging, and he's going to have to hit a couple so that he can feel confident in his role.
All right, final question for you. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 4-12 last year, last in the division of the NFC South. Are they about the same, worse, or better from a season ago?
I have them being slightly better. As a diehard fan, I'd love to see them make the playoffs as a 5 or 6. I don't think it's going to happen. I have them winning 6 to 7 games. I think they'll shock people when they come out and beat Carolina in week 1. And they're going to get some press around them, and people are going to start building up a little bit. But the schedule is so tough with having to play the AFC North and the NFC North, going through Green Bay, Chicago, New Orleans twice, Atlanta twice. I think it's going to be a really tough road.
Yeah, I'm with you, but I do think that this is not the same Buccaneers team that played last year and finished at 4-12. I think we see a little bit better team this year with Lovie Smith at the helm. Thanks a lot, Michael. I really appreciate you coming on, and we'll hopefully talk some Bucs football some more. Now it's time for me to take a look at the NFC West. All right, with the NFC West, even though it does have the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks in it, we won't dwell too much on it because, as I've said many times throughout the first 10 shows of this season, this is the strongest division in the entire NFL. You literally have 4 teams, which any one of them can make the playoffs. Any one of them could win this division. And even with Sam Bradford going down for the St. Louis Rams, I think that they're still going to be a pretty good football team because they still have a good defensive unit. And offensively, Sean Hill may not be too far off from bringing a Sam Bradford himself. He might even be a little bit better. It's going to all be up to that offense. But I like the Arizona Cardinals. They were 10-6 last year. They just missed the playoffs. So let me focus on the Arizona Cardinals right now. As far as the Cardinals are concerned, I think the sky's the limit. You know, they kind of getting 10 wins and not making the playoffs when teams like the Green Bay Packers at 8-7-1 got to go to the playoffs because they won the division was kind of there. And that, you know, led to a lot of questions of, wow, should we really let a division winner that, you know, barely won their division at 8-7-1 go in and have a playoff game? Well, you know, the league is going to have to consider that. But the Arizona Cardinals narrowly missed the playoffs at 10-6. And it was because they were in a division where the winner, the Seattle Seahawks, was 13-3, and the San Francisco 49ers were 12-4. This year, the Arizona Cardinals, even though they've had their share of bad news, they lost a pretty big defender early on before the season began. They were able to activate Tyrann Mathieu from the PUP list. And he's been back playing. Terrence Newman playing for the defense is looking pretty good as well. Blast from a pass there. The Cardinals also fixed one of the woes that they had from a season ago in the kicking department. They released Jay Feely, as they liked rookie kicker from Clemson, Chandler Cantazaro. Looked like pretty early on that Cantazaro was going to win the job, and he did. Because Feely looked awful in the preseason. He missed some very makeable field goals, and that's never good. The minute you start repeatedly missing field goals in the preseason, it's not going to carry good, especially when there's a young Bigfoot that could be had for less money on the roster, and that was the case with the Arizona Cardinals. On the defensive side of the ball, I think the Cardinals are going to be just as fast or faster than the other three teams in this division. And that's why I give the Cardinals a shot. I like, believe it or not, Carson Palmer this season. I like Carson Palmer to finally, you know, he's finally like around. He's like, I'm out of the place in Cincinnati where I didn't feel loved. I'm out of that hole that was Oakland, where I don't know if you guys saw that that survey where like 100 players were asked the following question. You would have to double my money to ask me to go play blank. And I think it was 48% of the players that were asked responded and said Oakland. They don't want to go to Oakland. You would have to double their salary to go play in Oakland. But I digress. I digress. There's let's not take cheap shots at the Oakland Raiders. I'm just saying, you know, I think Carson Palmer is ready. He's happy where he's at. Question is now for the Arizona Cardinals at the running back position, Andre Ellington. Is he going to be the guy? Is he going to be able to carry the load? He carried 118 times for 652 yards last year, scored 3 touchdowns, and now he is going to be the guy. Mendenhall's gone. He's going to be the starter. Can he carry the load? Last year as a rookie, he had an impressive 5.5 yards per carry. Is that something that he can duplicate this season and carry that throughout the entire season, getting 250-plus touches in 1 year? Let's see if he can do that. If he can do that, the Arizona Cardinals are going to be okay. The only other question for the Arizona Cardinals I have is on the defensive side of the ball. They lost Carlos Dansby to free agency. I think he's with the Browns now. Darrell Washington was suspended for the entire season because of substance abuse violations. And then their big blow, the injury I spoke about earlier, Darnell Dockett suffered a torn ACL in training camp. So that leaves a lot of holes in the defense for the Arizona Cardinals. If guys can snip up in those positions to fill in for those guys, once again, I think the Cardinals will be okay. 10-6 last year, just missed the playoffs. I think the Arizona Cardinals will find a way to be just as good as they were last year. And maybe this time around, those 10 wins will be enough to get him into the playoffs. Moving on to the St. Louis Rams. Oh, well, obviously, I don't think as highly of the St. Louis Rams as I did just a week ago when they had Sam Bradford. And you know, that was going to be my number one question this season for the Rams. Is Bradford finally ready to pull it all together, play 16 games, and be the guy that the Rams invested all that money in? Then he goes down with an ACL. And that's just bad luck. I feel sorry for the kid, but I feel sorry for the St. Louis Rams organization. They were the last team that had to play a rookie that much money before the new CBA and the new rookie pay scale came along, and I don't believe they've gotten their money's worth on Sam Bradford. So here they are now, have to go with Sean Hill, and it's not going to be the same. I think Sean Hill's a decent quarterback, and he's going to help the St. Louis Rams make a run. You got to remember, they were last in the division last year, but they won 7 games. They were 7-9. It wasn't like they were, you know, only won 3 or 4 games. They were 7-9 in a very, very good division where all other 3 teams in that division had 10-plus wins. That is impressive. The St. Louis Rams certainly can show or have shown that they can hold their own against the likes of the San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks, with those teams being at the top of the division. But now, obviously, it's going to be all about the wide receiving core, having to help Sean Hill, Tavon Austin, Stedman Bailey. Those guys are really young. Austin Pettis, Brian Quick. They added Tennessee Titan Kenny Britt in this offseason. So that receiving core is pretty competent. And if they can stay healthy and run clean, crisp routes for Sean Hill, they could be really good. I like Zach Stacy. I know this is not a fantasy football show, but I've been drafting Zach Stacy just about in every league that I'm playing in, if he doesn't get snaked beforehand. I like the kid. I think he's a good, strong runner. Obviously, Sam Bradford going down, there's going to be a lot of 8-man fronts that he's going to see, and they're going to test Sean Hill. They're going to say, can you throw on us? But if Hill can do enough to get the ball downfield to the likes of Tavon Austin and Stedman Bailey, watch out for the St. Louis Rams. I think they're going to surprise some teams this year. The only final thing, Michael Sam, the first player that was taken in the 7th-round pick, the first player to be openly gay in the NFL, is he going to make this squad? From what I've seen this preseason and in camp, he's done enough. Michael Sam has held his own. He's had some sacks. He had a sack, I think, against the Green Bay Packers. He's sacked Johnny Manziel twice when they played Cleveland. This kid has shown that he can make the 53-man roster. It's going to be interesting to see what the St. Louis Rams do with him, but watch out for Michael Sam. If he doesn't make the Rams roster, I guarantee this. It's one of those this-I-guarantee moments.
This-I-guarantee.
Michael Sam will play for a National Football League team this season. St. Louis Rams, just about where they were last year. I'm going to give them one less win because of the injury to Sam Bradford. I think they'll be 6-10, possibly 7-9 again, but they will surprise some football clubs. Let's move on to the San Francisco 49ers. Now, I did get someone late send me an email and said that they would represent the San Francisco 49ers, but it was pretty late in the day and never got around to talking with that individual. But hopefully we'll have him on later on when we need more San Francisco 49ers stuff. In looking at the San Francisco 49ers, you know, I have to look at the coach. And Jim Harbaugh is he's a tough guy. And the way he coaches sometimes can – what you say, great on a player. And so the players believe in him and they're all on board. Is it going to play? Is it going to just, you know, eventually be like, all right, man, we're not sure how we want to continue to be kind of being yelled at this guy. The other thing is that the San Francisco 49ers themselves haven't, you know, believed in Jim Harbaugh enough to give him a huge contract. He becomes a free agent at the end of the season because they haven't extended his contract. So it's going to be very interesting to see whether the Niners decide to pay him a lot of money. I you know, the reports are that Harbaugh wants to be paid like he won the Super Bowl, even though, you know, he didn't. He got to the Super Bowl, and last year he got to the, you know, championship game. But he hasn't won a Super Bowl, but he wants to get paid like one. not sure that San Francisco is willing to do that. So it's going to be interesting if they sign him to a long-term contract before the season is out. The other thing is Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback. You know, if you've listened to the show long enough, you know that I wasn't a big fan of Harbaugh making the move to Kaepernick over Alex Smith when he did. Now, obviously, Kaepernick has taken him to a Super Bowl and to a championship game. I'm not sure it's Kaepernick who's getting them, though. You know, I've also been a big proponent on the show that it's not the quarterback alone who gets you to the promised land, okay? And just because you haven't gotten to the promised land doesn't mean that you're a horrible quarterback. I don't believe all the blame and all the reward should go to the quarterback. There's a lot of folks out there who do believe that. I'm not one of those guys. I always think that it takes a team, both offensively, defensively, and special teams unit, to contribute to a team winning a Super Bowl. However, Colin Kaepernick wanted to get paid. He got a contract that was kind of team-friendly, but it made it look pretty huge, especially since he's got triggers that could, you know, make him a lot of money if he meets some of those incentives that are in that contract. I'm not sure Colin Kaepernick is the guy for the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm not sure he's the guy that will win them a Super Bowl championship. I think he is very good at what he does, and his, you know, kind of read option, run the ball, throw those intermediate passes. He's very good at it. But when he needs to make that crucial deep pass, I just don't think I believe in Kaepernick that much. I think the way the contract was structured by the San Francisco 49ers kind of shows they don't believe Colin Kaepernick is that guy. They left it open so that they can kind of get out of it. Then you got to look at their defense. Another year with this defense, they've looked pretty good. But Aldon Smith now, as I said earlier in the show, 9-game suspension. So that's going to hurt. You got to go with one of your top guys. He's not going to be there for 9 games. You have to work around that. Can that defense work around that, especially when they're going to be playing some high-powered offenses? That's going to be something that's going to play out over time. On the offensive side of the ball, you know, they've not looked too good in the preseason. I know it's just preseason, and you know, players aren't going as hard as they could in the preseason. But still, when your offense struggling to score points, they're just not gelling right now. How long is it going to take them to gel? Frank Gore, is he ready to kind of like pass the baton and the torch either to young rookie Carlos Hyde or possibly Marcus Lattimore, if he gets healthy later on in the season? I'm not sure Frank Gore can go 16 games, stay 100% healthy, and contribute the way he's done in the past. So that means they're going to rely on Colin Kaepernick not only to run the ball, but to be productive by throwing the football. So watch for that offense. I don't think it's going to be as potent as it has been in the past. Who's going to emerge is the other question. As the big passing threat. We all know Michael Crabtree, but he's not that spectacular. This offseason, they brought in Stevie Johnson. He came in from the Buffalo Bills. Remember Stevie Johnson? He's pretty good. I just don't think that he is going to stretch the field for San Francisco. And we know Vernon Davis, who, you know, he's been looking for a new contract. So it's Michael Crabtree, Anquan Boldin, Stevie Johnson, and Vernon Davis. Those are going to be the weapons for Colin Kaepernick. It's not a bunch of household names outside of San Francisco. I know in San Francisco you know those guys pretty well. But no one really that stands out and says, wow, that's the guy. That is the pass catcher for the San Francisco 49ers that's going to be the best. Someone's going to have to step up from that group. Someone is going to have to say, I am the true number one receiver, and I am the man for the San Francisco 49ers. I don't think Michael Crabtree has done that. He hasn't been vocal enough to come out, and he hasn't produced that well on the football field to give him that status. I think defenses are going to come after Kaepernick. I think after a couple of years now of tape, the defenses have, they're going to know how to start to protect against that read option that he does. And I'm not sure that he's going to be able to run as easily as he's run in the past. I'm going to be very curious to see how the San Francisco 49ers do week one on the road against the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are catching them at a good time. Early on, when the offense is a little shaky, they're still kind of working out the kinks. Later on, I think the San Francisco 49ers will do better, but they're going to struggle early. The San Francisco 49ers finished 12-4 last year, and they were second place in their division, got the wild card. This year, I'm not sure they're that good. I'm not sure they're as good as 12 wins. I'm still calculating my spreadsheet, once again provided by James Reese, working out the whole season so that I can do my prediction show, which is the next show coming up on Monday. I like the San Francisco 49ers just looking at their schedule, especially their schedule early on when they're on the road against Dallas. Then they come home to open their brand-new Levi Stadium, and they play the San Francisco 49ers, I mean the Chicago Bears. Then they go on the road to Arizona, and then they host Philly. Those are the first 4 weeks. Dallas, Chicago, Arizona, Philly. I think after those four weeks, we will know a lot about the San Francisco 49ers. I think they'll be slightly worse than they were last year. I don't see them winning 12 games again this season. And they'll be in the playoffs, just not with 12 wins. And finally, the defending Super Bowl champion, Seattle Seahawks. Folks, I cannot lie. No, I don't like big butts. But I like big butts and I cannot lie. You know, you got what I'm saying there. Actually, I do. But that's another story. I cannot lie. Every year I say that if you're going to do rankings for week one, the team that should be number one is the Super Bowl champion. That's just the way I believe it. They're the defending Super Bowl champions. They should start off at one, and as the season progresses, they either move up or they move down. But they can't not start at number one. After watching this preseason and how the Seattle Seahawks have played this preseason, I am, without a doubt, without any question, saying the Seattle Seahawks should start the season as number one. They've looked just about as good or better than any other defending Super Bowl champion coming into their next year. As a matter of fact, I will go so far as to say that in the last 10 years, which is as long as I've been doing this podcast, 10 seasons, over the last 10 seasons, I have not seen a defending Super Bowl champion come into the following year as good as the Seattle Seahawks are coming into the season. They look fantastic right now. Now, obviously, it's not without question. Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks got fined $300,000 for violations of practices this offseason, so much so that they're going to be losing practices next year. And I think it was a $100,000 fine to Carroll and $200,000 fine to the Seahawks. So there's obviously stuff going on there with Pete Carroll that, look, there's a reason why he left SC, and he left FC in shambles, okay? This is the second time that the Seahawks have violated the practice rules, limited contact with players. So, you know, there's a toughness that Pete Carroll is instilling to his players that kind of trickles down everywhere. And, you know, the league started taking notice so much that last year they saw that the Seattle Seahawks, you know, were guilty of too much contact during those off-season practices, and they did it again this year, and they got fined. So we're going to move on from that, but just know that you got to watch the Seattle Seahawks. Remember, they've had multiple players suspended for PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs, and that can't be good. But they are the defending Super Bowl champions. They are looking really good. They've looked fantastic. As a matter of fact, not just really good. They've looked fantastic this preseason. When the starters were in there, they remind me of a team that is still hungry. And that is what I saw at the Super Bowl last year. When I saw them play that first play against the Denver Broncos, it went over Peyton Manning's head. They were just faster and hungrier than the Denver Broncos. And what Seattle has shown me right now, usually a team wins a Super Bowl, they're not hungry anymore. They're not hungry. They're not hungry to go all the way and do all the things that you have to do to be the world champion. Well, Seattle hasn't let up. They're still hungry. They're showing right now that they are still hungry, and they're saying, we are the champions. You got to come at me and unseat me. That's what you have to do. Here we are. Take your best shot. And it starts Thursday, just a few days from today. I cannot wait. Thursday night, September 4th, from CenturyLink Field, they host the Green Bay Packers, and Green Bay is going to get the first shot to knock the chip off the shoulders of the Seattle Seahawks. And guess who wants to do it in Seattle? Green Bay. Remember the touchception, the fail Mary, whatever you want to call it, that Green Bay should have won that year? Well, payback time, people. That's going to be good. Thursday night football, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time from the Link, CenturyLink Field in the Pacific Northwest. I like the Seattle Seahawks to win the division again, most likely. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But not with 13 wins. They were 13-3 last year. I think people, when you are the defending world champions, people come at you a little harder, a little stronger, and they pull out all the stops and all the tricks to try and beat you. So I think they slip up, and they probably lose one or two more games. That being said, this is going to be a tough division. It's going to be great to watch the NFC West and how it progresses throughout the season. It's going to be fun to watch that division. Okay, I'll leave you with this. Preseason is over, people. Last night, Thursday Night Football, all the teams played their final preseason game. Not a whole lot of starters, except what the heck was Eli Manning and the starting offense doing out there for the New York Giants? Regular season college football has begun. That was good to see. Games that actually mean stuff. The next time you see NFL football, it is the start of the regular season. That game between Seattle and Green Bay, Thursday night football. If you haven't joined the Survivor Pool or the Pick'em Pool, go out there, check that out, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Get on it. Find all our social media handles on the top of the page at www.nflrnr.com. The next show is the NFL Prediction Show, where I will tell you who I like to win every division, who I like in the playoffs, and I will give you my Super Bowl teams. I'll leave you with this to think about. For the last 9 seasons, I've had as my Super Bowl picks a Peyton Manning-led team and the Dallas Cowboys. Will that be the same this year? Make sure you tune in. I'm Steven Miranda for NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.